Letters.
On Donald Harris, Burberry, Sickle Cell Disease, Vienna, Catherine Parr, and Reading Books.
In defence of Donald Harris.
From Dr. Robert Blecker, Professor of Economics, American University, Washington, D.C., Dr. Stephen Fazzari, Professor of Economics, Washington University in St. Louis, and Dr. P. Cy Wing Ho, Professor of Economics Emeritus, University of Denver. Your article on the intellectual trajectory of Donald Harris, the father of Kamala Harris, described him as a combative Marxist economist. Article The Other Donald, July 27th. That is misleading and inflames the already heated political discourse in America. Far from being an orthodox Marxist, Mr. Harris, our professor and the supervisor of our PhD dissertations at Stanford, applied his deep critical thinking to a remarkable variety of economic theories. He encouraged his students to do the same. His research includes Marx's analysis of capitalism, but he was especially critical of particular aspects, including the Marxian labour theory of value and the theory of the tendency of the rate of profit to fall. His engagement with economic theory is much broader. Mr. Harris's work also explores the ideas of Adam Smith and David Ricardo, mainstream neoclassical theory, and the work of John Maynard Keynes. It is not right to say he did not move on. Mr. Harris continued to evolve in his thinking and in his applied work on economic development throughout his career. The combative Marxist label thus mischaracterizes the breadth and subtlety of his intellectual contributions.
From Avinash Dixit, Professor of Economics Emeritus, Princeton University, Princeton, New Jersey. You say that Mr. Harris proposed that firms must choose from a book of blueprints, which need different capital goods, in his book published in 1978. Alas, that had been proposed more thoroughly and rigorously in 1953 in a brilliant paper by Edmond Malanvaux, for which he should have won a Nobel Prize. And Robert Dorfman, Paul Samuelson, and, yes, Robert Solow, whom you cite as author of The Aggregate Capital Growth Model, covered it more comprehensively in a book from 1958. Perhaps the mathematics of all this were beyond the capacity of the so-called Marxists of Cambridge.
Fashioned out of war.
From Mark Kumarar, Director, MKA Economics, Stirling. Burberry has a rich heritage. Article, Lower Your Aspirations, July 20th. Some styles of its traditional trench coat can cost close to £3,000, that's $3,800, which is impressive considering it was designed at the start of the 20th century as part of the British military uniform designed by Thomas Burberry. His coat became known for keeping British troops warm and dry in the trenches of the First World War. I doubt many would have thought it would be a luxury garment 110 years later. The new boss should not forget this important piece of history when deciding the brand's next manoeuvre.
Treating sickle cell disease.
From Javier Guzman, Director of Global Health Policy, Center for Global Development, Washington, D.C. High and Mighty, August 3rd, discuss the need for new pricing strategies to increase access to genomic medicines for the treatment of common genetic diseases, such as sickle cell disease. However, most people with sickle cell disorders live in sub-Saharan Africa and will never have access to these therapies. This stark reality is the result of market forces. If payers have money, products will be developed and priced highly. But it is also a consequence of weak infrastructure in low-resource settings. Genomic treatments require conditions that are suitable for hematopoietic stem cell transplantation, such as specialized medical facilities and highly trained healthcare workers, which don't exist in most African countries. It is therefore essential to fund approaches that have better chances of widening access in the developing world. For example, accessible in vivo gene therapy for sickle cell disease could potentially be administered once, directly to the patient, without the need for complex health infrastructure.
Home Truths in Vienna.
From Ramin Amigi, Vienna. Vienna's government-sponsored housing system is better described as public or subsidized housing, not social housing. Article, Paradise Cost, August 3rd. There is social housing, or Sozialbau, in Vienna, but it is a subcategory of public housing and targets relatively low-income households. The most prevalent type of public housing in Vienna, the one which you described, benefits the middle classes and is called communal housing, Gemeindebau. The city's higher-income population easily qualifies for this type of housing. The implications of Vienna's aggressive public intervention in the property market are serious. The city government owns many apartments and controls many more through regulations, so most housing is only ever for rent, never for sale. This restricts the supply for sale and makes home ownership expensive. That reality is reflected in Vienna's rents remaining relatively flat, while prices for house buyers have gone through the roof. Austria's home ownership rate is the second lowest in the EU. In Vienna, less than 20% of residents own their home, which makes it difficult for Viennese to build wealth through property, the oldest asset class.
A Woman for All Seasons.
From Dr. Richard Waugerman, Clinical Professor of Psychiatry, Georgetown University, Washington, D.C. Thank you for highlighting that otherwise obscure story about how the brilliant Catherine Parr survived the plot against her by conservatives, who were fearful of her reformist views, in the court of Henry VIII. Heads will roll, July 13th. A royal physician warned her to agree with everything the king said, as soldiers would be ready to arrest her for heresy if she contradicted him on theology, which they often discussed. She did as she was told. Henry, who had approved the plot, grew befuddled and asked why she now concurred with him when she had always argued. She explained that she had just been trying to distract him from his constant physical pain. And, as God created Eve to obey Adam, every wife should obey her husband. Professor Susan James has plausibly speculated that Kate's otherwise inexplicable metamorphosis to obedient wife near the end of Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew deliberately alludes to these events, which happened to the last of Henry's six wives. By the way, Anne Boleyn was beheaded just 4 months after Henry sustained a traumatic brain injury after a jousting accident, in which his fully armoured horse fell on top of him. His brain damage probably led to a severe deterioration of his personality, along with marked irascibility and cruelty. He developed frequent migraines and gained huge amounts of weight.
Mastering Tolstoy.
From Jason Smith, London. Regarding how long it would take to read the world's greatest books, I am reminded of a quote from Woody Allen. I took a speed reading course and read War and Peace in 20 minutes. It's about Russia. Article, The Greatest Books of All Time, August 3rd.